Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Yeah, no more TGIFs, just happy hump day.
Everybody
gets all excited about it. It's just another day. And it was just another day for gold being down 250 today at 1290-280. Silver was pretty much unchanged at 1949. Both, well, I should say all the white metals were strong today, up just shy of 0.5%. Platinum was up 7 at 1477. Palladium was up 4 at 832. Even rhodium took advantage. That was a big $50 today, up over 4, almost 5%, 4.75%. So big move in rhodium today. And we have the USDX trading a little bit stronger, 0.02 at 80.07. And crude oil today was up 148 at 103.81. Paper markets today, you have the stocks finishing higher. The Dow climbed 158 points today at 16,533. Yeah, the NASDAQ up 34 at 41.31. S&P up 15 at 1888. 10-year yield, 2.54%. Now, they tell us retail business has been completely lousy for the first how many months of this year due to the weather, but those one percenters are out there buying all luxury items. Luxury retailers are much stronger, and you even have Tiffany gaining 9%. So those who have money are spending it, and those who don't have it,
are wishing they did.
Yep. Are wishing for a little bit of a trickle down. But certainly highly unlikely when you have inflation that has been creeping into this country and will continue to creep into our products and into our needs, our food and energy, until our monetary policy is addressed properly. So it is, yesterday was the elections, and there was, you know, several big elections going on. Kentucky, you had the Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. He trounced the leading Tea Party challenger. So is the Tea Party over?
I don't think the Tea Party is over, but it's facing organized resistance. You know, there's that old cliche, metaphor, whatever, aphorism about first an idea is ridiculed, and then it's violently rejected, and finally it's accepted as, you know, common sense, words to that effect. Tea Party was kind of ridiculed by the Republican establishment when it began 5-6 years ago. They just thought, ah, a bunch of idiots out there, and the yokels out in, you know, the hinterlands that are, they'll come and they'll go. But it turned out that they made a big difference, and they did manage to get elected, and they threatened the established hierarchy for the Republican Party, and now the Republican Party is reacting. And they're saying, oh, or if you're a Tea Party member, we're going to crush you. And they're using all of their money, well, at least a lot of their money and whatever organization skills they have to make the Tea Party die or at least be badly diminished.
Well, he used a substantial amount of cash in order to get his into the primaries yesterday. You also had some Pennsylvania had some major elections, primaries going on yesterday, but we'll talk about those probably after the first break. We had Mark. We'll talk about Clinton. Chelsea is Clinton's mother-in-law. She was here vying for a nomination for Congress. She even had the Clintons backing her, but she lost big time. But we'll talk about that after the break. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today, and from the Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hi, Al. How are you guys doing?
Not bad.
Not bad.
I see. I see that you'd like to talk about elective surgery today. Is that right?
Yeah, because the experts.
Now, here's my question. What do you mean by elective surgery? Is that when a bunch of Obamacare bureaucrats get together to vote on whether you'll get surgery or not? Is that
what
you mean?
Not so. Well, you know, there's a few people that I guess still can afford elective surgery when a majority of us probably have to pass. But, you know, health authorities do say that at some point in our lives, at least once, we're going to have some sort of elective surgery done. And elective surgery, Al and Melanie, isn't all cosmetic surgery. It's not all about, you know, nose jobs and stuff. It's it does encompass actually the three most popular surgeries that are done in America, which 70 million Americans have elective surgery each year. But with the Affordable Care Act, I'm sure those numbers are going to decline a bit. And basically, the surgeries that I'm talking about that are the most popular elective are knee surgery, back surgery, and sinus surgery for sinusitis sufferers. And according to Dr. Thomas Russell of the American College of Surgeons, he said, no surgery is minor. So these, even though they're elective surgeries, these are definitely not a minor category of surgeries. These are considered major surgeries out there.
Well, I agree, and I think when he says no surgery is considered minor, they also mean that no surgery is considered cheap.
True.
I think minor surgeries would be inexpensive. It's all major surgeries, which means it's all major prices.
I just want to add one more surgery to that I hear. Every time I turn around, somebody is their gallbladder.
That's not elective. Gallbladder surgery is usually, you know, people are having to have it removed because they can't function at all.
Well, why is it becoming such? I mean, is it something that they're making them? I mean, not making them, but is there a reason why it's? I mean, Everybody that I know has their gallbladder removed.
Well, usually gallbladders will need to be removed when they're congested. They're either going to be congested with stones or waste product residues that the liver filters out of the blood system. And usually it's diet-related. Gallbladders that have a lot of stones usually are calcium-based, just like you would see in your kidney stones and so forth. So there are a few different varieties of gallstones, but for the most part, it is a lifestyle issue.
All right.
Okay.
So what do we need to know about elective surgery?
Well, the thing is, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, that we're told allopathic medicine is a standardized medicine. You've heard that, right, Al? Standardized. But it's really weird. If you look at different parts of the United States, some parts of the U.S. will overdo certain surgical procedures, while other sections of the U.S., patients actually have to jump through a bunch of hoops even to get qualified to have the surgery done when it's a non-emergency type of surgery. So I think that's interesting that it's not all the same from coast to coast. Now, the three most elective surgeries, as you know, it's not a facelift, it's not a nose job, it's not breast augmentation. It is something that encompasses our knees, back, and sinuses. 13 million Americans have to have knee surgery based on an osteoarthritis problem. It's the number one cause for having knee surgery. So, you know, our knee joints wear out. They cause pain. We lose mobility. So they go to the
doctor. But do they actually wear out?
Well, I mean...
What I mean by that is this.
Mm-hmm.
I look at knee surgery, for example, as perhaps a lifestyle issue. All right? More so than... People think the knees wear out. My understanding is that cartilage doesn't have any blood vessels in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that the cartilage between your knees, it doesn't get nutrients, and it doesn't expel waste unless it is squeezed like a sponge.
Mm.
It absorbs nutrients from the surrounding fluid. When you squeeze it, it squeezes the excess out, the toxins out, and then when it's released, it absorbs from outside. And my point is this.
Mm.
Most knee surgery, to my understanding, is caused by a sedentary lifestyle. Your knees don't rust from non-use, right? What
well,
they
you
do
might be
is they,
right about that.
Or
There's
excuse
couple...
me, they deteriorate from non-use. I'm saying that incorrectly. You've got to get out and exercise in order to squeeze that cartilage, because once it doesn't receive enough nourishment, it effectively dies. It just deteriorates and dies, and you wind up with bone on bone. Now you got to have that operation.
Right, and a lot of it is nutrition based. And a lot of it is trauma-based because, mm-hmm. you know, people that...
Well, I understand with trauma, I get that. You need an operation.
Yeah. Right. Well, but, I mean, people that jog, play tennis, they're very active. So they use those areas and they have a lot of impact to those areas. So they can get some trauma, some fractures. They could get some real interesting compound fractures even in the stiff cartilage. But you know what? The ancients, Al, they used to say you had to lubricate your joints, and they would use a lot of the oils like olive oil and stuff, not topically, but inside the body. So a lot of amino acids, the omega-3s, help with keeping the ligaments and joints flexible and working properly. And we'll get to some of the nutrition that's specifically designed for your knee joints, okay? Basically, we have, statistically speaking, 1 in 4 people tend to be good candidates for the knee surgery. So there's like 500,000 people getting knee replacement surgery each year. So that's 500,000 people opt to have metal, plastic, and porcelain joints surgically installed. And these procedures and these products have a 90% success rate, we're told. So the recovery tends to be long, about 12 months, and includes lots of physical therapy. And for those folks that are not approved, that aren't good candidates for the insurance, through insurance or whatever, for the surgery to have a knee replacement, they get bumped down to the fallback option, which is arthroscopic surgery. And you got to do your homework on this one, because this second choice, this procedure where a surgeon supposedly attempts to go in and clear away debris that's caused by what you just said, bone rubbing on bone, and smooth out the joint to reduce the friction and any pain. Well, studies are saying that that this surgery has got a nickname. It's called surgery sham, and because a lot of times patients wake up from the surgery and the joint wasn't even touched. All they have is expensive stitches. So you got to be careful.
Now, in other words, the doctor didn't really do anything to the joint.
Right. And,
all he
and
did
the ones
was
that,
tended
yep.
to something.
And the ones that do, you know, it's it's just not a cure-all, okay, for the problem they're suffering from, which, as you pointed out, probably non-use, appropriate use, and lack of nutrition. Well, let's bump over real quickly to the back issue, because that's a real common problem, a slip disc, a bulging, ruptured disc, herniated disc. It's a real problem. We have 25 vertebrae, and the vertebrae are filled with fluid. These discs are in between our cushions for the vertebrae to float around and bounce on. And so we have to make sure we're hydrating properly so those discs can stay plumped up with fluid for that cushion. So what most people don't know, though, when they get a slip disc, Al and Melanie, is that 90% of those cases recover on their own without any surgical intervention. So they may take 6 to 12 months to recover by resting the back, no strenuous activity, and using some anti-inflammatories. So people just need to be patient with that. Now, for the more serious back cases, they may need a laminectomy where it removes a portion of the bone and soft tissue around the nerves and the spinal cord. That's a possibility if it's a really bad trauma to the back. So that's the second one. And then lastly, the other popular surgery is sinus surgery. 30 million people have sinus surgery each year for chronic sinusitis conditions. So they have these inflamed pockets behind the cheek and the brow, and it fills up with mucus and it creates a lot of pain and congestion. And according to New York sinus specialist Dr. Jordan Josephson, he says sinus surgery is not a cure because it doesn't resolve the cause of sinusitis. The main cause is allergies and your diet. People are allergic to their diet, basically. So the sinus surgery just attempts to help the sinus infection be more tolerable. But I used to work for a neurologist, and they would do those sinus surgeries all the time. Never did any good, really. So watch the dairy products. That typically is the culprit. You're allergic to dairy and just don't know it. And if you do have sinus surgery, be really careful that you get an excellent surgeon, because your eyes and your brain real close to those areas of the cavities they'll work on. And 1% of people having sinus surgery wake up losing their vision or have brain damage.
Well, you know, when you mentioned, if I heard you correctly, you said 30 million sinus cavity operations per year?
Right.
Well, at that rate, everyone would have one in 10 years if they were cured.
Yeah.
The fact that it persists, it implies that people are having an operation, and another year or two they have another operation, and another year or two they have another operation.
Yep. They could have repeated surgeries. It just depends on the situation. But getting back to your nutrition issue, so for the knee and the back issues, to help the bone and connective tissue areas, it's real important to get what is called a plant-based calcium that has magnesium and boron, and also get some natural vitamin C. A lot of people take the glucosamine supplements to help strengthen joints, ligaments, and connective tissues, but most glucosamine supplements are made from shellfish and cow cartilage. So if you manage to obtain a vegetarian source, it's most likely going to be coming from China, and that's not good either. So instead of glucosamine supplements, you're much better off eating your foods that are rich in natural sulfurs even. And the reason is sulfur is a mineral part of the chemical structure of amino acids that are needed for those connective tissues, ligaments, and so on. So foods like eggs and beans and some fish and meat, herbs even like garlic and horsetail and oat straw are excellent, have high amounts of sulfur, the calcium, the boron, and the magnesium.
That's You're going to have to give us some contact information, Wendy, because it's time for us
time to
move
go.
On.
I know, it flies. Yes, they can call us at Apothecary Herbs. The toll-free number is 866-229-3663. They can ask about the calcium formula there, 866-229-3663, or the website, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wendy, thank you. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
I just want to let the listeners make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Silver Eagles, great price, still going, flowing out the door. And, of course, you'll receive a 1-ounce Silver Eagle with each purchase that you make this month. We're going to continue that, and the month is quickly going by. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter. One will be going out. We have Memorial Day weekend coming up. It will be a shortened version of the newsletter, and you might, depending if we can get it out or not on Monday, it might not come out until Tuesday after the holiday. We will play a rebroadcast on Monday's program as it is Memorial Day. So I just wanted to finish up. We were talking about the primaries yesterday, and you had the in Pennsylvania, there was a nomination for Congress. Chelsea Clinton's mother-in-law, Marjorie Margolis, and she, of course, had obtained their endorsements, Clinton, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. And we were talking during the break, and we were talking about how it looks like both the Clintons are sort of losing their clout, with nearly 57% of the precincts reporting the person running against her, Brendan Boyle, which is 30, he's 37 years old. So again, it's people are looking to the younger people, perhaps. He was ahead by 58% over Margolis. So that was just a little bit interesting. And also in Pennsylvania, you have the Governor Tom Corbett. He was considered to be one of the most vulnerable Republicans in the races this year. He's going to face off with businessman. He's a Democrat, Tom Wolf. And he got the nomination with 54% of the vote. None of them are any good. It's in the news.
And if they are, they won't be for long.
Well, Pennsylvania, I mean, it's like you kind of want to, you know, Pennsylvania, you have you have Pittsburgh and you have Philadelphia and Harrisburg. That basically makes up for the whole state. And, you know, they're all Democrat and the rest of Pennsylvania are Republicans. And so it's...
I don't know what the breakdown is in Illinois anymore, but as a state, as states go, Illinois is, you know, at least as shameless as Pennsylvania may be, and maybe even a little bit more. So what's next, Molly? Here, I've got one. You remember how this is from Dow Theory Letters. Do you remember how Reagan challenged the Soviets? The Soviets fell apart in trying to keep up with the U.S. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now I hear talk of war as a supposed attempt to bail the U.S. out of its current economic predicament. I see China and Russia in a joint effort to unseat the U.S. as a world power. They don't need a war. With idle threats, they will force the U.S. to continue its military empire and its giant military spending program until the U.S. is so heavily in debt that nobody will buy our debt. The China-Russian alliance will do to the U.S. what the U.S. did to the Soviet Empire. Again, this is from Dow Theory Letters. Do you think that's a reasonable prediction, Melody? Do you think, first off, is it a reasonable observation that China and the U.S. are working together to say, oh, I think we're going to have a war in Ukraine. Oh, I think we're going to have a war over here. Oh, we're going to have a war over here. And keep us dancing around trying to, in theory, prevent these wars that are, they're just feints. They're not real. They're not real threats. Do you think that's reasonable? Think it's really happening?
Well, the Bible says you have wars and rumor of wars.
True story.
And so I don't think we'll ever know behind the scenes, the agreements, the handshakes. And I believe, and we mentioned it last week on the program, I believe countries are positioning themselves. And, you know, the old saying, my enemy's enemy is my friend. And I think that a lot of that is going on. The relationship with Russia and China, yeah, they have their issues. And but so does the U.S., eventually a war will happen. The world needs a war for multiple reasons.
What the world needs now is war, hot war. I don't know that we ever need a war.
But they need a war.
Yeah.
They, the elite, you can't have the, you know, whenever there's the economic problems that the world faces.
Just economic, but even criminal. Good war can destroy a lot of records, a lot of evidence.
Yeah,
a lot
population
of can get away in the confusion.
You know, their little population control experiments and so forth. So, a war is coming, but we just don't know which one, who will initiate it, and but certainly it's possible that. You know, it could be, I mean, there's just so many hot spots going on in this.
I understand that. And they mentioned in this article again from Dow Jones, they are saying that with idle threats, China and Russia will force U.S. to continue its military empire and its giant military spending program until the U.S. is so heavily in debt that nobody will buy our debt. It seems to me that that train has already moved out of the station. We're already so far in debt that the only person who buys the majority of American debt is the Federal Reserve. They're the ones that have been taking it. And Belgium, and no one knows where Belgium is getting its money. You know, this is an interesting situation because you can at least wonder if Belgium isn't simply making up for the tapering. Federal Reserve says, oh,
absolutely.
You know, the economy is so improved, we can taper from $85 billion a month down to $45 billion a month to, that's all we need now to stimulate the economy. Oh, and incidentally, we have just our good luck that we have Belgium coming in and taking almost as much buying almost as many treasury bonds as the Fed used to do under quantitative easing before the taper. And so we have to wonder, where is Belgium getting the money to buy this? Is this a stealth tape, a stealth quantitative easing? We've got tapering that we talk about. Oh, we're tapering because we're getting stronger, but we've got someone has given money to Belgium to buy U.S. debt. And there's a good chance, there's a possibility at least, that it's the Federal Reserve. And they're just using Belgium as a kind of puppet. Say, oh, you buy this on our behalf.
There's also accounts in the Caribbean purchasing our debt that is supposedly backed, and it's, you know, accounts that the Federal Reserve use in order to buy up the treasuries. So, but so much needs to be purchased. They needed something a little bit bigger than the Caribbean. So I guess they went to Belgium. But absolutely, who were we talking to, or were you and I discussing the Federal Reserve? I mean, they are destroying it. I mean,
yeah, I know.
With their policies.
I know.
I mean, they are the Federal
Reserve. Little article.
That
was an article I wrote for the last issue of the American Survival.
They are ready to self. They are self-destructing by plan, by design. Yeah. It doesn't
They're
matter.
Certainly doing it. They're,
yes.
And what's happened in the big problem, you know, you could argue that some people made a mistake and they adopted an economic policy that has turned out to be, maybe it was adopted for good reasons, but it's turned out to be a bad policy. And part of that would be the use of fiat currency rather than gold and silver. There are inherent problems in that are enormous, and they are becoming increasingly apparent. But to make a mistake is one thing. But to continue when you see that mistake is something else entirely. And what I believe is that the Federal Reserve has to know it's in deep trouble right now, that the economy is in deep trouble. Government has to know we're in deep trouble. You know, we talked about it before, the idea the government has ordered more than 2 billion rounds of ammunition for domestic government agencies. It's not for the military, not for the Air Force, the Army, or the Navy. They're buying it for the FBI, the IRS, the Postal Service, Department of Homeland Security. Agriculture Department put in an order just in the last week or so for body armor, right? In addition to ammunition and submachine guns. It has to be true that the government is expecting some sort of violent assault by the American people on the government. Or they are expecting to go to war on their own and initiate violence against the American people with all these weapons and bullets. And the only reason they're likely to do that is because, one way or another, in the midst of an economic decline that is significant, not necessarily a collapse, but enough to get everybody so mad they're ready to shoot. What other explanation is there for government having all these weapons? What's the explanation? They're going to war with somebody, and it's not the invading Mexicans or the invading Chinese or the invading Russians. All these weapons have to be intended for you and me, ladies and gentlemen. And from my perspective, I can't see a reason why they'd be called to do that except in the midst of a serious economic decline.
I could think of another reason.
Go ahead.
With some of the, it's probably a little bit out there, but you have these corporations that make these items. And, you know, ammo is a little bit different, but I know there's manufacturing plants that, you know, make the body armor and so forth. Supposedly they're bringing home the troops. They have all this product. Somebody needs to buy it, or these companies will go out of business, and most likely all these companies are bought and paid for by a lot of those who work in Washington. So it's just a matter of laundering the product and keeping these things from and they'll probably, you know, send them off to, you know, maybe down to Mexico or someplace else along with the guns.
And we're fast and furious. We can now supply body armor to the Mexican drug dealers as well as ammunition. But I don't see that as a likely explanation, simply because the Obama administration is clearly anti-gun. I can't imagine that they are going to subsidize.
But yet they control.
Just to protect the gun producing.
I didn't say the ammunition. I was thinking about the body armor and some of the other items.
It's possible.
But they are all owned, and you have a lot of hedge funds and so forth that do own these companies. So, you know, it very well could be all about Wall Street and the keeping things together just a little bit longer. That is another idea.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I got another one here from Credit Suisse Investors, shrug off tax plea. This is from the New York Times, and it kind of it amuses me. I'm easily amused. Melody, you may know that, but I'm easily amused. This amuses me. I'm easily irritated also. A day after Credit Suisse pleaded guilty to tax evasion in the United States, the Swiss bank says that it is able to conduct business as normal despite its criminal conviction. All right. Which implies that the crimes will continue unabated. I mean, if they've been, as the article goes on, it says in part, Credit Suisse on Monday pleaded guilty to one count of conspiring to aid tax evasion in a scheme that spanned decades. All right, if the scheme has been there for decades, then we'd have to say the scheme is normal. And Swiss Bank says it is able to conduct its business as normal, despite its criminal conviction, which implies that the crimes will continue. I don't imagine that's what they meant to say, but that's what the language says, if you care to read it. They also pay out $2.6 billion in penalties, and they've hired an independent monitor for up to 2 years. Somebody keep an eye on them, make sure they don't commit any crimes for the next 2 years. I had an uncle, actually he was my stepfather's uncle. We called him uncle. I wasn't related to him by blood. And I won't name him or the corporation he worked for. But after World War II, he started going from pinball machine to pinball machine, cigarette machine to cigarette machine. He was collecting coins for the criminal enterprise, mafia. They owned this corporation. I guarantee everybody in the audience would know the name of this corporation. You'd know it if I said it right now. He wound up working his way up through the organization until he became president. He started out just as a bag boy collecting change out of these machines. He wound up president of this corporation in Washington or in Chicago. He was ultimately called in front of the Senate Crime Investigation Committees a couple of times. He was deeply involved. I mean, this was, everybody knew it in the family. Government knew it and the rest of it. He was involved in crime. At one point, the FBI set up in his office, in his outer office. He had his office and the office where his secretary sat. The FBI set up a desk, and they monitored every transaction going in and out of his office. And my uncle, Earl, I'll give you that much, he had to maintain two sets of books, one in his head and one that would satisfy the FBI. One, that the one in his head is what was really going on, and that was the money that was being skimmed, and no taxes were being paid on it. And the other one was the one that would satisfy the FBI. And the point I'm trying to make is that it was a criminal enterprise. It was a big-time criminal enterprise, and it's morphed now into a legitimate corporation. It's no longer a criminal enterprise, but that was its roots. The crime continued even with the FBI sitting outside his office. Nothing changed. I'm reading this article about Credit Suisse says, oh, business as normal is going to go on despite its criminal conviction. I'll bet it does go on just as normal, and it will be more than likely. There will be further crimes committed, whether we'll hear about them, they'll be exposed, prosecuted, I don't know. But
Oh, pay a fine and they'll go away.
Well, they did, but $2.6 billion, pretty serious fine.
Yeah.
We're going to pay a fine now by...
They make trillions, Al. They make trillions.
I understand. We're going to pay a fine now by running some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and here we are on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom, and I want to just take a brief comment on Obamacare. A definition. Someone sent this to me by email. 27,000 pages defined in one sentence. The Obamacare bill is now up to 27,000 pages. You might want to read that before you go to for you get any medical care. Obamacare, 27,000 pages defined in one sentence. And here's the sentence. To insure the uninsured, we first make the insured uninsured and then make them pay more to be insured again so the original uninsured can be insured for free. Does that make any sense to you, Melody?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You have personal experience with that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So you had something also you wanted to talk about with Obamacare.
Yes, the LA Times came out today and they said the administration and the Obama administration quietly adjusted key provisions of its signature health care law to potentially make billions of additional taxpayer dollars available to the insurance industry. To the companies that provide coverage if they lose money. And this move was buried in hundreds of pages of new regulations issued late last week. It comes as part of an intensive administration effort to hold down premium increases for the next year. So, hey, you know, keep your premiums lower. And, you know, next year, this year's an election year. And next year, the corporations have to be signing up for Obamacare. So, hey, we'll help you out. We'll pay you if you lose money. And so
and where will they get the money that they use to pay the
well,
insurance
from the taxpayers.
I understand. which means they're just hiding. You're going to pay more for Obamacare, folks. And they know that, but it's like getting legitimate numbers on the inflation rate and the unemployment rate and the quantity of money that's in circulation in this country and the size of the national debt. They're also falsifying the numbers relative to Obamacare. Says, look, you're getting a special deal. Why are you getting it? Because the insurance companies, even if they suffer a loss, are being paid behind the scenes to compensate for that loss from the government. And the government's going to get that money from where?
I said
ultimately from you and me.
I said from day one, this is nothing but to bail out the insurance companies. And, you cannot, it defies logic and reality. You cannot bring all of these people into a program where there's no decisive regulation or premiums charged for issues that one might have and not have an insurance company have a problem. I mean, it's impossible. The only way they can eliminate that problem is, of course, to eliminate the people as they come to them.
Eliminate your access to medical care.
No, to let you
restrict.
They will restrict and they will let you die. They will let you die. And that way you're just, you know. So it's nothing but a bailout for these insurance companies. And
there was a think tank.
Amazing.
Back in the late 1990s, and it might have been the Rand Institute. I think maybe it was Stanford out in California, but I think it was the Rand Institute. I don't remember clearly which think tank conducted the study or came to the analysis, but they concluded at that point that only 25% of the money the government collects in taxes actually reach the intended beneficiaries. For example, if the government says, oh my gosh, we've got to help the poor. Oh, we've got to help the minorities. We've got to help the children, and therefore we're raising taxes on humility to help these poor disadvantaged people. Well, by the time they got done between government and government-approved middlemen, they would consume 75%. They take $100 from you, keep $75 for themselves and government-approved middlemen, and only 25 bucks would reach the intended beneficiary, the poor, the minorities, women, whatever.
So most charities are run.
They ran that study again a couple of years later, and by the time they did it the second time, it turned out only 20%. They'd gone from 25% to 20% that was reaching the intended beneficiaries. Point behind all of this is if you are concerned about the poor, the blacks, women, whoever, you ought to take the money out of your own pocket. Just give it to them directly. If you took half as much, instead of sending the government $100, give 50 bucks out of your own pocket to the poor, the blacks, whoever. All right, the poor, the blacks, whoever, they would get at least double what they get out of the government, and you would pay only half.
But now that's how all charities work. That's why when I donate to locally, I donate to the Salvation Army. They really do probably the best job of them all. I never donate to Red Cross. I don't donate to a lot of the big charities because they keep it all.
Yeah.
They keep it all.
Well, you know what this comes to in part. This is in
part. They don't want you to send food and clothing and everything. They want cash.
Yeah, I know. I understand. You get part of this is based on the public's inclination to be tempted and seduced by the promise of a free lunch. Government is going to give something for nothing. To the poor, to the minorities, to children, to women, whatever. You get a free lunch. All that really, you don't really are not going to get. There is no free lunch. Somebody's going to pay for it, and they're going to be angry about it. I mean, when you think you're getting something for nothing, somebody else is losing something they've earned and they've worked for no good reason. And they will, over time, become angry, and they say, I don't care what kind of problems you're having. And somewhere along this, we have to become responsible, all of us, and including people in positions of serious power. They have to be responsible enough to sit back and say, look, we can't have it all for ourselves. We've got to make sure that the poor and the rest of them have enough where they can get by, and they have to be able to earn it, not depend on us to hand out. You know.
I mean, people who have it want to give. They want to give, but on the other hand, people who need shouldn't be placed in that position due to some political legislation that was written to benefit Wall Street and the multinational corporations. That's where people should become angry at, not to the people that receive it. It's taking away their, you know, the access to do something, to produce. That's where the problem lies.
It's partly, and part of what we're talking about is when you accept the idea that only the government can take care of the poor, the minorities, the women, the children, whatever. If you're going to accept that premise, you are going to accept a rationale for bigger and bigger government. The truth is we can handle our own problems if we carry
these. Hey, if they can do it properly.
No, they don't even want to. Their purpose is not to help the poor. Their purpose is to grow government.
It's to keep them poor.
Yeah, it's like just like doctors that instead of curing people, they're only handing out pills that deal with the symptoms. It's a great business model. People keep on coming back. They have to buy more pills and more pills and more pills to treat the symptoms. They never get cured. They just keep on treating symptoms, and that keeps big pharmaceutical companies in business, keeps doctors in business. If you cure people, you've just lost a patient. You've lost a consumer. You've lost a customer. So we don't want to cure people. Same thing with the government. They don't want to cure the poor. They don't want to cure that. It's a source of persuading people to give more money to government. The government keeps 75 cents out of every dollar it collects on behalf of the poor. I'd like to run a charity where I could collect 75 cents out of every dollar I collected. Keep it for myself. Huh? Actually, I wouldn't, but in theory, it's a tempting idea. And it's hustle, hustle, hustle. It's one of these things where it happens around the world to some degree. People, we have become so consumed by the idea of commercial or commerce, and we are so tied up in an economy rather than a nation. We've had that shift of values talked a little about yesterday. It's not doing us well. It's not serving us well, and some people are beginning to get upset about that. And in fact, here's an article from the New York Times.
Wait. I have a question.
Okay.
This is coming in by email. We always forget to remind the listeners. If you do have questions and you would like to email us, use questions@dgscoins.com. Questions@dgscoins.com. You can also use my personal email address, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Either or, the email will get here to me. And we do encourage you to send us questions about anything. And this is in according to Debka File on Wednesday, May 21st. News came in of a large Hezbollah military forces heading towards southern Syria to help the Syrian army overcome the rebel forces fighting for more than a week to capture the Syrian Golan town of Quneitra, opposite the Israeli and Jordanian borders. In addition, the U.S. assigns 13,000 servicemen to the first ever. Could this be the trigger for the enlarged war with Syria?
Well, if we're talking about sending 13,000 U.S. military to Syria, in theory, it's going to blow this war up. It's going to expand it some. That's one of the theories.
Well, this is the U.S.-Jordan-Israeli exercise at the Syrian border, yes.
U.S.-Jordan-Israeli
exercise at the Syrian border.
Well, it could be. It could be. 13,000 troops, plus, I don't know if that includes people in airplanes or whatever, support. Hard to say. That might be enough to signal an invasion. Not just, you know, a little needling and a little participation, but perhaps an invasion. I wouldn't bet on it. but I'd give it 30-40% probability.
Okay. And today we have the China and Russia agreement about the natural gas purchase of $400 billion, which took place today. It would be paid by either with ruble or Chinese currency. Do you know? We did have something on that.
We talked about it in the last day or two. We knew it was coming. Everyone understood it was coming. Now it's been done. It's not exactly a big deal in an immediate sense, because it's going to take several years to build the pipelines from Russia to China. And from my understanding, China won't receive natural gas from Russia until about 2018. So we've got 3 or 4 years before the financial impact of this really becomes significant in terms of selling gas to China. But the political implications are significant, because it indicates that President Putin and Russia are not isolated diplomatically because of Ukraine. They're still out there doing business. All right, this is a big deal. This is an important deal, and it's a 30-year agreement, which indicates that they plan on continuing to do business between Russia and China for 30 years into the future. This isn't casual or just for a few minutes, a few days, a few weeks. Few years, 30 years, three decades. It indicates that Russia is growing in economic power and political power and global power, and certainly an alliance is forming between China and Russia. And hard to say how this is going to work out. In fact, Jordan, let me think. Iran, I believe, is implicated in a new association between China and Russia. And that's just suggesting we've got a new international agency or coalition to provide an alternative to NATO, for example, or to provide an alternative to the European Union, or to provide an alternative to the United States. So we won't see the absolute direct impact of the new agreement between Russia and China in the next weeks or months. But it's going to be there. It's going to be something that is going ongoing into the future. And it can't be, I can't see any way that the United States can benefit from this alliance, especially when we hear rumors that China and Russia are both interested in collapsing the U.S. dollar. We'll have to talk more about that tomorrow. We're on our next program. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Thanks for listening. We will be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.